Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a guest to talk with me about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, or the Bible. Today, I have invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Brother Kieran, a very warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, Beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. And he has come for a few muffin talks and muffin meetings and shares his vast knowledge on the Bible. With today's interview, we are continuing our first virtual teaching series organized by the Mercy Spirituality Center. We will have 8 topics on the women in the Bible. All sessions are connected but also stand alone. So the first topic was the women in Genesis, then the women, the Book of Ruth. And today we're going to talk about the Book of Esther. But Kieran, after the sessions on the women in Genesis with Eve and Sarah, etc., and then the second session on the Book of Ruth, where does the Book of Esther fit in here?
That's quite a difficult question because Genesis is concerned with Torah, law and teaching. This book is with the part of the wisdom literature, and it's really better associated with, well, the Torah, for instance, is not being kept in the life of in the original edition of the Book of Esther. One of the problems is the Torah is not there. It's in an environment as pagan. We have two Jews that seem to be in a very insidious position with regard to issues of diet, issues of, well, being married to a Gentile for Esther. So you start to see it's difficult as a book for a start. In fact, it was so difficult, it wasn't until the 3rd century that it even got accepted into the Hebrew Bible. It took another 100 years for it to get into the Western canon, and another 200 to get into the Eastern canon. So we're dealing with a problem book for a start, but its association with it's probably better dealt with in association with books like Ruth and the book and the and Judith, which is a very similar story of a woman who delivers her people. Only in the case of Judith, it's the local people in her own country. And in the case of Esther, we're dealing with a worldwide deliverance of Jews throughout the Persian Empire, which was a pretty big area of land.
So the Book of Ruth and the Book of Esther do have some similarities because there is no mentioning of God, is there?
Well, this is one of the problems. When you read the Book of Esther, it comes to us in two versions. And the first version is in the Hebrew Bible, you just get story. And that, of course, is the version that is in the Protestant Bible. And as many of the Bibles that are printed today come from, are in the Protestant version, and they add the extra Catholic books in the section called the Apocrypha, you will find that the reading the book in 9 chapters, I believe, read it first in the Hebrew version, in the version out of the Hebrew Bible. Then read it with the 6 editions, 107 extra verses coming normally under the heading edition A, B, C through to F.
Oh, my God, that sounds very complicated.
I know. Read the simple version, first of all, without the complications. Because what the editions do is they turn the focus away from Esther and Mordecai, who are the great deliverers of the Jews from a worldwide persecution, to making God the hero.
Yeah.
And whereas, and that of course is so much like, reminds us of the book of Ruth, because yeah. there, good people do what they're supposed to do and the people are delivered. The same thing in the first version of the book of Esther, chapters 1 to 9, and get the good old story of the heroes, God's heroes are, the
female.
Two,
the female heroes.
And Mordecai. Yes, right.
Well, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beata. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My guest today is Brother Kieran Finn, and we are talking about the Book of Esther today. And Brother Kieran, when we read the Bible, we are supposed to not think about so much of did it happen, but what is the meaning of the story? So when it comes to the Book of Esther, what do you think is the meaning of the Book of Esther for us today?
Well, we could also say, what about the parables of Jesus? Because they're stories with a meaning and a truth behind them. And what we're dealing with here is a grand story of two little people, two Jews living in a foreign Persian capital, Susa, and how they come through to eventually reverse a whole situation that is one of terror and fear in a strange land.
Brother Kieran, maybe we do have to say in a few words the content of the Book of Esther, just in case we have any listener who hasn't read it recently.
Oh, dear. Well, let's say you get the signals that there's something astray with the historical question, because we hear of Mordecai being taken away in 597 with the first wave of exiles into Babylon, and then he turns up well over 100 years later in the reign of King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes the First, as it looks when you read it. So we know that there's something astray. We have two edicts, 1 year apart, and lots are cast for the for the murder of all the Jews on the Persian Empire. And then we find, to our relief, that that edict gets reversed at the end, and the people celebrate their deliverance with the Feast of Purim. The book is written to justify the celebration of Purim, and it's a very popular feast, so perhaps the celebration preceded the book, but the book supports the celebration. Now, it starts off with a glorious bash of 6 months of celebration as the ruler of Persia shows off all his splendor and wealth, and with 6 months of celebration, by flagons without restraint is the actual wording in the text. You have to wonder who the Diggins ran the empire anyway. But so it starts off with this type of opening. Excesses abound. You could call the subtitle of the book, Excesses Abound. You have Vashti, the queen who gets deposed so Esther can come in. And Vashti won't turn up to be shown off. Now, this is the sort of thing that happens when you read the first story and the second story. Why did Vashti not turn up? Well, according to the rabbis, she was supposed to wear her crown and nothing else. Now, that's trying to add to the story. Now, we don't get the sordid details of why she didn't come, but she created such a huge problem and took 7 eunuchs to actually go and get her. It took 7 eunuchs of wisdom to work out what's to happen. And the great result out of all of the storm in a teacup is that an edict is passed telling all the men that they are to be the leaders and in charge of their own households.
So who was Vashti again?
Vashti was the wife of Ahasuerus, who was the ruler of the Persian Empire. So now the decision has to be made when the king gets lonely. Every version throughout the empire is to be taken and put in the harem. And there will be a year's preparation for one night with the king. And the one who favours him most, the one that he likes the most, will be the new queen. And then enter Esther, Jewish, but her uncle Mordecai, her guardian, had said, don't let them know you are Jewish. And then, of course, enter the horrible Haman. Now, could you imagine the delight of the young people celebrating this feast of Purim? Pur means lot, the lot, a lot, a gambling lot where you throw the dice. And the lot is going to create great trouble because this nasty Haman comes along and he wants everybody, by order of the king, to bow to him. And Mordecai won't bow to him. No reason given in the version of the Hebrew Bible, but in the pious version that we have, it's because he won't bow to anybody but God. Well, Haman gets so upset at this nasty Jew that he demands, he pays the Persian ruler 2/3 of the empire's total cost, running cost, to allow an edict to be written demanding the death of all the Jews throughout the Persian Empire. Mordecai lets Esther know, and Esther braves entering the forbidden appearance of a woman before the king to beg. Well, no, she's very smart. She doesn't beg for the deliverance of her people yet. She asks the king, would you bring Haman to a little party, a meal, a banquet? The meal has got 10 banquets. It's full of eating, feasting, and all sorts of interesting things.
So Haman now, was like the finance minister of the Persian king?
He was made assistant number two in the kingdom. Could be Minister of Finance, Deputy Prime Minister, you name it, right?
And he wanted to show his power against all the Jews.
Against Haman, because Haman bugged him immensely. And with that, murder the whole lot, all the Jewish people. So then the king hands him his signet ring. This signet ring of the king is sort of passed around with great abandon. The king seems a little bit simple, right? Now, when Esther hears, after the experience of Vashti, no woman was unbidden allowed to go into the king. She takes her life in her hands. She prays and prepares and fasts and sackcloth and ashes and all those parts of Jewish piety, goes in to the king, and in the Hebrew version, she goes in and she gets a warm welcome. The golden scepter is sort of held out for her to touch. But in the pious version that we have, his face goes fury, shows all over it, and Esther almost faints with terror. And then God has to step in and change his heart. Well, you see, the problem with the two versions, read the simple one first and get the good story. So now, the meal, Haman, wonderful, wonderful. He's been invited for a meal with the queen. Now, they have this nice little meal, and the king swears that he'll give you anything, even half my kingdom. But no, she says, we'll have another meal, and that's tomorrow. And that night, the king is sleepless in Susa, and he has the royal records read to him, and there's a record there of how Mordecai had saved the king's life by reporting two eunuchs who were going to assassinate the king. Now, has anything happened? Has he been rewarded? No. So the king thinks, well, what am I going to do to reward this man? And the following day, in comes Haman. And the king says to him, what can I do to honor this man that I really wish to honor? And of course, Haman thinks, me. But alas, he doesn't get told who it is until his mind has gone into all these splendid ways of rewarding himself. And he finds to his horror, he has to do it for his arch enemy. Lead him around on the horse and announce to everybody, this is the person the king wants to honor. And then shame, he's had his first fall. He had already built a 75-foot gallows to hang this Jew Mordecai from. That's about six stories high. And that's, again, the lovely exaggeration you find in the book. And then, of course, the next night, when the king and Haman dine again, the second fall is about to take place because Esther asks for the life of her people against the plotting Haman. The king is furious. He storms out in rage. Haman throws himself on Esther, pleading for his life, and the king comes in at that fatal moment. You are trying to rape my wife? And Haman has had it in a big way. So somebody happens to be there to suggest, but why not put him on the 75-foot-high gallows that he's built? So exit Haman, and then now, how are we going to save the Jews? Well, the edicts of the kings of Persia could not be revoked. So instead of waiting 1 year to kill all the Jews, they're now allowed to fight back and defend themselves. So we have in chapter 9 of the original edition of the book, 75,000 enemies are destroyed and all of the empire rejoices. Well, that could be a little bit of an addition and an exaggeration, but the story then goes on to say that this is to be remembered and celebrated over 2 days, the Feast of Purim. Gifts are to be given, and with great fun, the young people, they can dress up as one of those key characters, Esther, Mordecai, Vashti, Haman, or Ahasuerus, perhaps. And because of this partying, this big partying that goes on, one of the reasons why the name of God is not mentioned in the book is because no one in a drunken state will take the name of the Lord, our God, in vain.
What you said with the Purim, I attended a couple of Purim sessions in the synagogue. Yeah. And they read the story of the book of Esther in a shorter version. And every time the reader names Haman, the people all boo.
Yes.
And when they name the person of Mordecai, they are cheering.
Yes, right.
Oh. And it's a huge celebration. The kids dress up and the whole synagogue is laughing and crying and depending on who is mentioned.
Yes.
It's really, it seems like it's the good and the evil so close together.
Yes, yes. And it's good you mentioned laughing and crying together, because I think it's a book that does make you both laugh and cry. You know, the fear of the Jewish people throughout the centuries in exile. The book is what is called a diaspora book. It's written in the dispersion, away out of the land, the homeland. And diaspora is the place of having to adjust to a new culture. And I think this book is a great challenge to living in a different culture. And you can kind of understand why the book eventually became so popular, because of the festival and because it touched into a deep chord in people. It's a book about fear. It's about fear being reversed. It's the sort of, this is the whole pattern that's there. And the book itself, it speaks to people. I had a very interesting experience of, in 2016, I saw a movie called Denial. It was about a young Jewish lawyer, Deborah Lipstadt. And she was taken to court by a David Irving, the British historian, the English historian, who was, because she called him a Holocaust denier. And in this great court case, finally, it's fascinating, she couldn't speak. She couldn't have witnesses who'd been in the Holocaust. And the lawyer, her lawyer, was brilliant. Finally, the judge awarded the case to Deborah Lipstadt. Because if the Holocaust denier had won, just imagine the consequences. And then the thing that fascinated me was a few days later, I had a commentary on the book of Esther and was reading it. And it started off with telling the story of Deborah Lipstadt going to celebrate the feast of Purim and hearing the book of Esther and coming to that line, when Mordecai says to her in the palace, if you keep silence at such a time as this, rather relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from some other quarter. Who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this? In our lives, all of us have this call to do something important in our lives. We don't know what it might be. It might be raising a child. But those things we won't ever probably understand. But she felt that for her, Deborah Lipstadt, she had received her education and her background for a moment such as this. And I think that's really one of the critical messages. We don't know, but we have to put our heart and soul into things.
And Mordecai, he was teaching and educating Esther. He was like the stepfather. And so she would have learned everything she knew from Mordecai. And he might have said, well, now you're in the position, you have the education, you have been chosen as the queen, and you have been chosen not just to be the queen, but for a different person, a purpose.
Yes. The moment Esther realizes that and takes the courageous action of going to the king and finally to beg for the life of her people, she becomes a real queen and she becomes the main figure of the story. And I think that's important for her.
And I think the other important lesson is with Haman. What he wishes to receive, he has to give to his enemy. What he wishes, how he wishes to destroy his enemy, that's exactly the way that he is destroyed.
But the thing is, he is excessive in his demands to destroy a whole people for what one person does. And the version that we have starts off with a dream of Mordecai, of two dragons in a great conflict. And at the end, of course, Mordecai is given the signet ring of the king and becomes the new assistant of the king. So reversal again, excesses, balance, reversal. And Esther is the epitome of balance.
I think that we have a lot to share about the book of Esther. And as you also mentioned, it is a book about a lot of feasts and a lot of food, isn't it?
Yes. Oh,
a lot
yes.
of celebrations, from yes, banquet yes. to banquet.
That's right. Yes. Two banquets of excess and two banquets to celebrate Purim. That's why you have to have 2 days of celebrating Purim.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing more on Wednesday and when we talk a little bit more about the book of Esther. And so just to let you know what else is coming up for the Spirituality Center. So we are still not going back to the center at the moment. So the center is still closed until further notice. And but we do have some Zoom sessions, some online sessions. So the one with Brother Kieran Finn is always on a Wednesday at 10:30 to 12 o'clock. And from 12 to 12:30, we have the option to stay online and talk to Brother Kieran and ask some more questions. So it's 10:30 to 12 o'clock, and please register with us online at info@mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And we also have the carer support group with Letitia Pudumparat, a repeat on Thursday, the 21st of May, from 1 o'clock to 2:30. And please also register with us. So this is especially meant for people who care for family members, private carers, but anyone who is caring and would like to have support and to join that support group is welcome to join. So we are looking forward to Brother Kieran. And that's the third session on the Old Testament. And we'll have in total four sessions on the Old Testament and four sessions on the New Testament. Please note that this center, the Spirituality Center, is closed, and that everything, all programs that are in our booklet are suspended until the end of May. We will review the situation constantly and we'll let you know when we are able to take up our programs again. And let us pray for all victims of the virus, physical, mental, emotional, and material victims. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you very much, Brother Kieran. Looking forward to this session with you again. Thank you.
Okay, bye.